This morning, Laura told us about Pica-Lipschitz theory in the case of relativistic particles. I will apply it to gravity and show you how it differs from the ordinary quantum mechanics case. And that's what we call Lorentzian quantum cosmology. This is work I did with Neil Turok and Jean-Luc Lehne. And we published it in the two papers which I mentioned there. So let's first do a recap of Wick rotations. So if you have ordinary quantum mechanics, then you have the Schrodinger equation. The Schrodinger equation can be solved using a part integral formulation where you basically have a propagator G, which is a propagator, which is a path integral to go from x0 to x1. So you consider all paths to go from point A to point B. This gives you a Green's function, and using the Green's function, you can evaluate your wave function in the time forward. So you can basically use this Green's function to obtain the wave function at a different time. And this is a nice formalism. However, the argument of the Green's function is highly oscillatory. And for that reason, people often employ a Wick rotation. So what people do is, as you probably already know, is you rotate either to plus or minus it. And in this rotation, you basically get a real exponent. And for the more you want here, a minus sign and something which is bounded below, because then it converges exponentially. So this is what people would like to have from a Wick rotation. So if you now go to quantum cosmology, you have the Schrödinger equation is replaced by the Wheeler-DeWitt equation, which is basically the operator corresponding to the Hamiltonian constraint of your system. Again, if you apply that to the wave function, you get zero in this case. This is the Wheeler-DeWitt equation. You can derive a propagator for this Wheeler-DeWitt equation using BFV quantization, which is basically a generalization of Fadeev-Popov quantization of gauge systems. And in the end, for mini superspace, for a homogeneous and isotropic universe, the propagator looks like this. So I have, again, a path integral over the scale factor here. So you basically describe your whole universe by the size of the universe. You get an action here, which is basically the Einstein-Hilbert action, restricted to mini superspace. And you have an integral over the lattice, which is your gauge degree of freedom. And that's a little bit different from QED, but it's how it works. So what you should imagine is that you have a universe described by A0, which is a small universe in this case. And this slice is really a three-dimensional geometry. And then you have a three-dimensional geometry A1, which is the final geometry. And you basically integrate over all spacetimes which you can fit between the two. And that gives you the propagator, and that's something you can use to describe quantum cosmology. So the naive thing to do would be to say, oh, well, I've here an integral of n, which acts like time. So let's rotate to plus or minus in. However, if you do that, then the thing becomes real, but not bounded below. If you rotate up, then it will diverge in one direction. And if you rotate it down, it will diverge in the other direction. And this is called the conformal factor problem, which was first pointed out by Gibbons, Hawking, and Perry. And that's a problem which can be solved using Pica-Lipschitz theory, which I will show in a minute. So just to illustrate the conformal factor problem.
So if it's not bounded above its time, right?
Sorry?
If it's not bounded above its time, right? If my negative sense of something huge, exponential of negative something huge?
Yes, but if it both goes very big and very small, then it doesn't work. So e to the power something plus positive becomes very big. So if you start with a metric which is just the ADM metric, where you have there the scale factor, and you calculate the action, the zero-order action for the background, and you see that the kinetic term has a minus sign and the potential term has a minus sign. That's basically already the clue which leads you to the observation that the Wick rotation won't work. However, you can still make some progress. We had an ordinary integral over n and a path integral over a. If you make the redefinition of the lattice, which is a Lagrange multiplier anyway, and you re-parameterize your dynamical degrees of freedom as a Q, you can write the action like a harmonic oscillator, for which you can do the path integral, and you can reduce the propagator to an ordinary integral. So now the propagator looks like 0 to infinity over n, ordinary integral, e to the power is. So this is, again, an oscillatory bit. And this S0 is basically the classical path of the background, which is given by this formula. So what you now can do is you can say, basically say, I fixed my initial, my finite boundary, and I can try to evaluate this integral, which would give me the propagator to propagate from the initial to the final geometry.
You say that this represents the action of the classical path. What exactly is the role of n in that?
Well, you can solve, you can basically keep n as a constant. So you solve the classical path for any n. Yeah.
Does it represent something, is it like a mass or something?
No, it's a Lagrangian multiplier. It's basically the gauge degree of freedom in gravity.
But it's the proper time.
It's the proper time.
It's the rate of drop.
Sure. So you basically consider a particle, but you don't specify the final time, so you integrate over all final times. So now, what is Pico-Lipschitz theory? So I have an integral which is oscillatory, which you can write as an amplitude bit and an oscillating bit by saying that small h is a real part and big h is an imaginary part. So what you would like to have is big h to be constant, because then it doesn't oscillate. And you would small h, you would like that to go down, because then it converges. So Pico-Lipschitz theory gives you exactly that. So you compute the small h, you compute the saddle points, you compute the steepest descent and steepest ascent of those saddle points. And if your steepest ascent of your saddle point intersects your original integration contour, you can always deform the original integration contour according to Cauchy's theorem to this Pico-Lipschitz symbol. So in this case, you would like to evaluate the integral along this contour, because here it goes down. And for that reason, the argument is fairly peaked. And then you can use a saddle point approximation for this saddle point if you would like to make that approximation. So what you now can do is you can first consider two classical geometries. So you can take a big universe going to an even bigger universe. And if you then compute small h and plot it in the complex plane, the complex n plane, and it looks like this. And it has four saddle points. Two saddle points lay in the real axis, so they are relevant. If you now use Pico-Lipschitz theory, you can deform it to be like this. So strictly speaking, the deformed integration contour starts from zero, goes all the way to infinity here, and comes up again, and moves in this direction. So if you want to calculate the propagator, you get a saddle point approximation for those two points, which basically means that you either propagate from your universe to a bigger universe, or you first go to the waste, and then you go to your finite geometry.
We're in the end plane.
Yes, in the end plane.
Why do you say the initial contour goes to minus I infinity?
Yes, well,
the initial contour n is real.
Yes, it goes original, it goes from zero to infinity on the real axis.
Okay.
And then if you deform it according to Pico-Lipschitz theory, you
deform it like that.
Yes, and that's your replacement for Wick rotation, so to say.
Mm-hmm. So now it's a sum of two steepest descent contours.
Yes.
Yes. So it would be nice to also have a quantum example.
Is there some subtlety about what happens
with
the corner of the contour?
Sure. So we now apply this to the no boundary proposal by Hartong-Hawking. So you have a classical universe which is like this, and it gets smoothed out at the initial point, and this would be a prediction, a generator of initial conditions, so to say. So this was first proposed by Hartong-Hawking, and they used Euclidean gravity, which has the conformal vector problem. And they choose a saddle point, and they obtain in the end that the propagator squared goes like plus 12 pi squared over lambda. And this is the famous result by Hart and Hawking. However, if we start from the Lorentzian integral from zero to infinity and just use Pico-Lipschitz theory, then you see that the original integration contour can only be deformed up through this saddle point. So if you now evaluate the propagator in that saddle point, you obtain, to your surprise, that it becomes minus 12 over lambda, or phi, where phi is the inflaton potential. So we get the inverse result of the Hartle-Hawking result. And it's kind of logical, because if you deform along the steepest ascent, so you push your integration down along the ascent, which becomes then descent, then the only result can become negative, because you started from zero, and you deform it down, so it has to become a negative result. So this coincides with Verlaine's tunneling proposal. However, there only were two options. Hawking and Hartle had one option. Verlaine had the other option. So there's not a lot of degree of freedom. But so we basically conclude that using the Pika-Lifshitz theory, the propagator for the null boundary proposal coincides with Vilenkin's proposal. So in principle, if you want this to be big, you need this to be very...
Zero representation is infinitely suppressed.
Yes.
So Martle-Hawking wave function is real, right?
Yes. Yeah, so that's completely right. So they have not only this saddle point, but also this saddle point.
Right.
They're complete conjugates.
So in your case, you have a phase, right?
Yes, we have an imaginary, and that would represent an expanding universe.
What is the meaning of that phase?
So it has to do with the expansion of the universe. Well, if you want to determine the nature of that, you have to do again a weak measurement, basically, and then it's coupled to the momentum of the. So you can.
The value for that thing, so it's the expansion rate.
Yes.
Yes.
The value
of it?
We didn't.
It's a classical one.
Yes.
It's the correct one.
Okay.
So. Now you can look at the consequences of this. So Hartle and Hawking basically predicted that you always start in the valley because you want e to the power 1 over lambda to be so big as possible. However, if you put a minus there, you basically do 1 over the probability, and then you prefer a very high phi. So this would coincide with the slow roll initial conditions of inflation naively, because you really want to start at the top of your potential, because otherwise you have no reason to follow down and make inflation happen. However, if you now also include perturbations in this prescription, you can show that if you have a classical background, described by Q again in the harmonic variables, and you get an extra term, which is basically the gravitational waves. There are two gravitational waves because there are two propagating degrees of freedom for the gravitational field. But if you would include matter, then they will come in a very similar fashion. Then Pika-Lifshitz theory basically predicts that you get minus 1 over lambda, which is what we saw before, but you get plus phi 1 squared. So this would basically say that using Pika-Lifshitz theory in the no-boundary proposal, the theory prefers to have very big gravitational waves on the final surface. So if you have no gravitational waves in your theory, you obtain a no-boundary proposal which looks like this. Originally, people would like to have small Gaussian fluctuations on the final boundary, which would look like this. However, if we do the calculation rigorously using Pika-Lifshitz theory from the Lorentzian quantum cosmology theory, you obtain a plus an anti-Gaussian term, which basically prefers very violent gravitational waves on the final boundary. So how many minutes do we still have? 3.
You just look at Pika-Lifshitz at n, or you include the phi? Like
so strictly speaking, you should do Pika-Lifshitz theory on the whole all integrals.
Yes, exactly.
So that's what we're now doing. But for this calculation, what we did is we said, well, if we only look for small phi 1, then the back reaction will be very small. For that reason, we use the saddle point of the background for the perturbations. And this seems to be a very good approximation, because if we include back reaction terms to second order, then the saddle points don't really move. So this really seems to be stable. And there's a mathematical reason why we get this theory and why it's difficult to deform to a theory which don't serve us from this problem.
There's another operation, sorry, I don't want to take your time, but if phi is equal to 0,
yes,
right, you could try to interpret, I'm not sure if this is the right interpretation, the e to the positive number over lambda as some probability or some density or weight,
yes,
for values of lambda. So then they would say that lambda goes to 0 plus, right, small positive, let's say, would be preferred.
Mm-hmm.
However, for you, very large lambda would be preferred.
Yes.
If I want to give that interpretation.
Exactly.
Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I agree with that. So to conclude, if you now try to study what's actually happening and why you get a minus and a plus sign, if you write it in adiabatic coordinates, you can say, well, I can consider an adiabatic universe where you describe time by the scale factor. You can write a metric like this. The action becomes like this for the background. And here you see that there's square root. And there's basically an ambiguity, because if this becomes negative, you are either going to plus I or minus I. So if you now do the calculation using Pica-Lipschitz theory, you can show that if you go below, you are in agreement with Pica-Lipschitz theory, whereas if you go above, you are in agreement with the Hartle-Hawking result. If you now go back using these variables for Q and this parameter for Q, you can go to conformal coordinates, where you have a metric which looks like this. And if you now plot the contour for eta in the complex plane, you see that if you approximate the waist of your universe, it goes to some finite value, which we set to be zero. So this is basically a Lorentzian integral. If you go below the waist, which is basically the classically forbidden region, for the Hartle-Hawking result, you go up, whereas for the Pica-Lipschitz theory, you go down. And this basically tells you that in order to do the Wick rotation, you have a choice to go either up or down. One will diverge, one will converge. If you also include gravity, then gravity basically forces your hand. So gravity forces you to take the wrong Wick rotation for the background. And this is basically the reason why we obtain the plus sign here and not the minus sign. So we think that using this calculation, we can basically show that any no boundary kind of proposal will always, in a semi-classical limit, generate big gravitational waves and big fluctuations on the final boundary. Whereas you would like that to be Gaussian random fields, because then you can easily predict, for example, the CMB and large hill structure formation. So thank you very much.